Very good. Can I just talk about the bill that's before Parliament, or will be before Parliament, and it's and the beginning of it, and where we are now, and what also needs to be done from now on to make it a great bill. It'll be a good bill, but we need to make it a great bill. Within a space of a year, we've moved from almost being no demand for a new modern slavery bill to a slavery bill. That we have a bill that we were able to consider, a draft bill, that owes everything to the Home Secretary, her making that commitment. And we could have campaigned for up, most campaigns I'm involved in always take 10 years. They don't certainly happen within a year. So it's her credit. And it's her bill that we've actually been looking at, although there's been lots of people contributing to the point where she considered what bill she would have. Parosha was one of the lawyers who Lady Butler-Sloss brought together for us to discuss what shape a bill should actually take. And we're now at a stage, as I say, where the Home Secretary published a bill. We've done a mega number of public hearings on that bill. We've published our bill. It's now with the Home Office. And we're waiting to see what results it will have. Very important, I think, to remember where the Home Office came from over this bill. It originated in the awareness of some of the Home Office that the prosecution policy was pretty hopeless, and therefore looking at the bill from a prosecution angle. And therefore one shouldn't be at all surprised that when we saw the draft bill, it was a prosecution bill and not a bill doing other things as well. The question mark after our report is whether it was going to do the prosecution effectively, let alone the other areas. And there are now, I think, three main areas where we wish to see the bill changed. One, I think, is absolutely fundamental, which would be the most difficult one to get through, but there are two other areas as well. The two other areas, you were discussing one when I came in, that was about the supply chains. Even if it's not in this bill, and we hope it will be, and it was not in the Home Secretary's draft bill, it's the sort of issue that one could imagine there being a great public campaign on, and a bill about supply chains being brought forward in the new Parliament. So although it would be a pity not to have it in, although it would be a failure of lobbying, a failure of imagination and nerve on behalf of the government not to include it, it's not an actual disaster if we didn't. The second area is about repositioning the victim in the whole of this discussion, in that it was, as I say, initially a bill to improve radically the abilities to prosecute slave owners, and the draft bill reflects that. How adequately, I will come on to comment on in a moment. But it was almost victimless free, the bill. And what we've proposed is that there should be a whole section of the bill which focuses on the victim. And I think in focusing on the victim in two ways. One, about what statutory provision of services should there be, so that it's uniform throughout the country, but also to prevent what is the horrendous experience of the current time, that you can be a victim of modern slavery and find yourself not only in court, but found guilty of undertaking activities which you only undertook because you were enslaved at that particular time. We're very hopeful that the government's going to respond on both those fronts, and that it's going to be much clearer support and recognition of the victim, and also about the get out of jail card, so to speak. And lobbying is going on both of those two areas at the present time, and I'm moderately hopeful. The other area is really how one prosecutes the slave owners, and again one has to understand where the government has come from, but then recognise how difficult it is sometimes for governments to realise that's why they started that position. It was didn't come. They didn't bring this position down Mount Sinai in tablets of stone. And before we saw the bill, people were talking about, most people, not everybody, most people were talking about a scissors and paste job, bringing together the three main acts which are used to prosecute slave owners and making it a lot more efficient. And here, in a sense, I just want to have a, emphasize how misleading I think this word trafficking is. It might be the coming word, but we've just had this horrendous example of young schoolgirls in Nigeria being kidnapped and may already have been sold into slavery. But it's talked about trafficking as though it's part of commerce. And one of the things when we started a campaign to get a new bill was actually to call a spade, this is slavery, and we should call it slavery. And the idea that it's trafficking, which may be in common usage now, but it should cease to be so. I don't think we're ever going to wake the public up to the crimes of trafficking. I think we need to actually punch it between the eyes that this is actually slavery. And we've tried to reflect that in the draft bill that we've proposed. And that is that the crime, the major evil, is slavery. That you can't consent to slavery, so it will cover children and adults. The next most heinous crime is to exploit children to the degree that slave owners do. So there's a crime of exploitation of children. And then there will be exploitation. And then there'll be the crime of trafficking. So that the bill, if it was this approach was adopted, will actually follow the charge sheet that the court will have before them, and the judge will take the members of the jury through as the trial continues its pace, and when he or she is summing up, these are the crimes in order of seriousness. And I think, and I don't know, because the Home Secretary hasn't been briefed as of last night on this, I don't know whether we've convinced the Home Office lawyers of this. And unless we get the first part of the bill right, which is on the prosecutions, so of what we're prosecuting and how we should prosecute, I think it's going to be immensely difficult for another 10 years to have a go at this part of the Act. And although once presented that the government will suffer certainly in the Lords, we'll be more carefully controlled in the Commons through our whipping system, but they won't be able to do that in the Lords, thank goodness, and that they will lose all three of these areas if they don't put it into the bill as it's presented from the Queen's speech onwards. The truth is, anybody's got any experience of organising in Parliament, it will be hell's own job to get people to cross party lines over definitions part of the bill, which I regard as the most important part, because I don't think we'll get another go at this for a decade or more, whereas people will be stirred up and angry and upset about whether we're treating victims properly, and will understand the supply issue. And coalitions might well be built on those to put those measures into the bill should they not be satisfactorily represented. But as I say, the lobbying is going on. The bill hasn't in any way been finalised yet, and we won't know until it's presented. Probably some of us might know the day before, but when it's published in Parliament. But it's been a huge journey within a year. It has the flavour it does have now because it was people in the Home Office who are in charge of prosecutions were angry at slave masters getting off and wanted an effective prosecution. But it wasn't they didn't care about these other things. Their job was about prosecutions, and therefore that they were the ones which, when the suggestion we should have a bill, began the lobbying in the Home Office to the Home Secretary that she should actually adopt this approach of a new bill. And I hope I've given you some idea where I think the draft bill, very much in draft, very much in secret, being built up, built up now actually is and what we hope to achieve. But by this Christmas, we'll know whether we've got a good bill to counter slavery or whether we've got a stunning bill to counter slavery. And I think the Home Secretary now realises that the chances are that unless, certainly two parts, I'm trying to persuade all three parts that are actually in the bill, the changes will be forced on her, and it won't be seen so much as her bill as it is now. She has every right to claim it as her bill. It wouldn't have happened without her deciding she was going to give time and effort, political capital to it, but it will be somewhat less of her bill unless we get these three parts into the bill before it starts its parliamentary process. That's my contribution.
Thank you. Before we move on to the next speaker, and we will be time for questions later, I just would like to ask you one very quick question. Is it still possible to make representations to the committee with regard to...
No, the committee's wound up. Again, it's horses for courses. I mean, on the supply, it's quite clear the Home Secretary wants supply change in the bill, because if you look what she wrote in the very early stages, once she'd committed herself to a bill, she talked about supply chains. So we know perfectly well it's not her who's opposing it. We had meetings with Vince Cable, and he said he took the lead from the Home Office. But I looked at the Home Secretary's face last night when I told her this. So, I mean, I think she's experienced as things go around the traps on this matter. And I do think it's number 10, not because they've got any evil intent, but because they're committed to lessen red tape. It's another bit of red tape. I think the body that will have most suasion in number 10 will be the Centre for Social Justice in mobilising the business community here. And that's a task I set in hand this morning after hearing that, really, the steer I got from the Home Secretary last night. We're going to try and, if need be, do a totally different sort of lobbying activity. One, if the bill is inadequate. I mean, there's all done, isn't it, by IT now. I just think, given that we have a right to, we have a duty to present petitions from our constituents, but they have to be written in this archaic English. But whether we can get 38 degrees and others to get members on a constituency basis to lobby on specific things, and then to get us all timetabled to present our petitions in 1 or 2 weeks, it will make parliamentary procedure impossible. So it will make a great impact if we can get 500 members trying to present the petitions about the modern slavery bill on the same 1 or 2 weeks in Parliament. And it would just, again, register these three key points, if we need to have those 3 points, or 2 points, or 1 point, when it actually comes to it. So there will be a stage of trying to convince MPs that, because we're in an election period now, we'll be doing this. I mean, I'm just jolly lucky I have an ultra-safe seat, but if I had an ultra-marginal seat, having 1,000 of my constituents lobby me would be unnerving, and therefore that will be part of our task in the lead up to the general, because, you know, a few votes will decide quite a lot of seats at the next election. So there will be a public process then, but any attempts that people can do with their own MPs to lobby them, or MPs that they know when we start this campaign, would be immensely helpful. But the committee stage is over. I think there may be the Home Affairs Committee, who feel slightly miffed that we had a joint committee of both houses. I think they might try and get three hearings on the bill. But I, God knows how many hearings we had. We had four a week for weeks and weeks and weeks. So. But it might be another stage. But I think the key thing will be, and you've got quite a few peers in Oxford, to lobby the peers that you know and to lobby MPs, I think will be very important. As the nearer we get to the election, the more it's a wonderful period for lobbying.